Shedeur Sanders, under pressure, bounces, takes his time, does it. Touchdown, Buffalo! Jinty, good cutback, lots of room, he's 40, like a rocket. Look at Jinty go, breaks a tackle, he's 20, he's 10, he's touchdown! 58 yards, Cook, end zone, caught! Touchdown, Luther Burden III, and Missouri strikes back!
All right, welcome back to another week of Burning the Red here, everybody. A little bit different. I have the worst internet in the world, apparently, in the city of Atlanta, Georgia. And so we're doing a little bit differently. So if audio is a little whack, I apologize. Andrew doesn't. Andrew, you're kind of boots on the ground. Before we get into a couple topics, you have no idea to which they are. I guess, do you want to talk about your boots on the ground efforts with prop betting, or should we go right into the surprise topic?
I thought you were going to talk about boots on the ground relative to like Eclipse stuff. Are you getting that?
I guess we are, but I don't care personally.
Yeah, I'm not super into it either, but I guess at like 3 o'clock today, that the Eclipse is going to roll through or whatever. So like, I don't know. I guess we'll see how it goes, but I'm not like a super jazzed up as most people, but boots on the ground, kind of prop betting stuff. So knock on wood, trying to leverage some of my government connections to just have a candid conversation with an assemblyman in New Jersey and hopefully get out ahead of some of the efforts that we know are coming kind of state by state to ban player prop bets in New Jersey specifically. It really feels like I'm just standing on a mountain against a snowball that's building up speed and coming straight for me, but can't hurt to try, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, what's the worst case scenario? Do you just waste like 45 minutes of your time, I guess, right? That's like probably the worst case.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I mean, we appreciate your efforts and at least your unselfish efforts in the state of Jersey. So, well, cool. Well, usually we don't have any sort of script or show sheet, and that's certainly the case today. I was on a walk and I thought of five potentially somewhat hot takes, and I want you to, Andrew, to take a side with it and see if it's reasonable to think one way or the other. And we'll just go from there. Does that sound good?
Do any of these have to do with you stealing Joey Hobert from me?
The first topic, Joey Hobert is worth a first round pick, which would mean he's really like a receiver 4 or better. You agree or disagree?
Well, I've already taken him in the first round in our initial championship series draft, I believe. So Do you think that you're pairing him? You don't think you're pairing him with McLeod, obviously, right? Because I'll take him on the way back in round 3 shortly.
I don't know. I do not plan on pairing him. I don't know how much I'll have of him, period. Okay. I just don't see a huge, which goes into a potential later topic. So I don't want to get too much into it. But like,
sure.
I don't know. I just don't think it's the most beneficial strategy to draft a quarterback early. I mean, there's just so many options that I'd rather just pick and choose those options later on. I think the running back and receiver group, it's more worth getting one in the third round than drafting McLeod in the third round.
Yeah, it's totally fair. I would take McLeod over Gabriel straight. I think that McLeod finishing as QB1 overall is like that. It's not that crazy of a scenario. And I think he's got a super high floor too. I think that TJ Finley really was the floor for that offense. So I equated to 2022 drafts, drafting Hendon Hooker in like the third or fourth round. Like I was willing to really let that true first tier of quarterbacks go, and felt like I was sneaking in a guy that I feel strongly belongs in that initial tier, but I'm getting him at a couple rounds discount.
Yeah, I mean, I can certainly see the case, right? If you look at McLeod, he averaged like 28 fantasy points in the first 3 weeks. He did pretty much average, you know, 14 points, 16 points, 9 points. So he didn't do a whole lot. The route for him to being the quarterback one would be that he is great on the ground. So are you happy with his potential upside on the ground, or do you think he's really just going to be what he was last year?
Last year was pretty nice, right? Ran for 8 touchdowns. Obviously, the yards weren't – his yardage output was, like, very weird last year, right? He had, like, a 100-yard game, but then he also had, like, lots of, like, games where he was, like, very much in that negative. I think they'll run him a decent amount. But I think the offense just goes bonkers this year. I'm really excited once we get G5 conference futures. Like, I might bet them and South Alabama, and just hope that maybe those teams meet, or one of those teams makes it to the finals. Especially if like you can get something like in the 8 to 10. To one range for both of them.
Well, I think the nice thing about McLeod is that the continuity of the conference, you know, a lot of times you get like this transfer, they go up, and then you have to worry about potentially the impact of that. But I mean, staying within the Sun Belt certainly helps. Maybe going back to the original topic of Hobert as a top receiver, do you like Royals? I mean, would you take him over? You wouldn't take him over Luther Burden or Tet. Would you take him over Torrey Horton?
Tough. You're tugging at my heartstrings. Oh man. I might.
I think Hobert's been super interesting because We knew the volume was there. We didn't know the quarterback for a while. And now that it's McLeod, who we've seen, obviously, other like just create superstar last year, right? Elijah Surratt was 20 points a game. And, you know, his finish, right? 20 points, 41, 29, 29, 17, 28, like insane numbers. So I'm like, man, this feels like a very safe pick. With like a Hobert over a Torrey Horton, which is my second topic, which is, Horton should not be drafted in the first round as maybe more of a second rounder.
Why do you think that way?
You know, in best balls, the nice big games matter. That's the big upside of him, like his first 4 weeks and his final game. But I'm just very concerned out of a first pick, you know, your first pick on your team, your best – the most upside and the best games you're going to get are the games that you can get pretty much anywhere from anybody, right? If you just find somebody that's going to play Utah Tech, you're good at receiver. And that's my concern, is that the consistency throughout the season is a little bit steep for a first round pick, especially when you have like Royals, who's going to be as consistent as they come, and Hobert with McLeod is going to be as consistent as they come. Like, it's kind of like my Emeka Egbuka theory last year was like, I don't really want to pay premium price for a guy that's really going to shine the most in the first 4 weeks against teams that are garbage.
Are you projecting and copying pasting Horton from last season to this season based on like, so many of his duds, he was dealing with injury, leaving games X amount of time in, struggling through injury. I can't remember if he actually missed any games or not, but like that, it feels pretty easy to explain away a lot of his down games in 2023 from just dealing with like some, I think it was ribs, right? Some consistent annoying injuries that probably impeded his performance more than like game plan utilization or just the quality of foe or anything like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at 2 years ago, he was more consistent. The year before that, he shined at the very end of the season, which is all very understandable. I mean, like, that was, he was young in his career. I will add to it, you know, the quarterback play is shaky for me. I don't love the quarterback play.
What are you expecting at Utah State for quarterback this year? Because there's four options, right?
Well, I guess, how many are you really considering as options? Legah and Petrus?
It feels very strange trying to figure out what's going on with that room. And there, I haven't tried to, like, to source any direct opinions from people covering the team yet, but I will. But you've got Petrus, right? That is, like, I didn't even realize he was actually at JUCO last year. I thought I read that he was, like, doing GA shit or whatever at Iowa, but maybe that was someone else. But yeah, I guess he played JUCO last year. I mean, we know he sucks. And then you got Bryson Barnes, who, like, it's interesting that he wound up there. Like, you would think you would have had other options as well. So, but if he wins the job, like, is he going to support a first round receiver? I love Legah, and he has put up some nice passing games that have led to big receiving games from his receivers, right? But I don't know if we could just project receiver outcomes based on the idea that, like, hey, it's going to be Cooper Legault for 12 games. Like, that feels like if you were betting outcomes for what's going to happen with the quarterbacks, Cooper Legault, my boy, starting all 12 games feels like it would, like, you could probably get pretty good odds on that for lots of different reasons. Because I just, like, it doesn't feel like that is the leader in the clubhouse, or if it is, like, there's probably like 10 different things that could play out and all of them at like a 10% chance or whatever. And then who's the fourth guy? Oh, McKay Hillstead. It feels like there's a lack of clarity surrounding what's going to happen with him this year. I could have sworn I talked to someone or read somewhere that the plan for him this year is redshirting. And did he end last year out for the year with injury?
I mean, it would explain it, right? Because I think it was at one point, it was a hodgepodge, but then it kind of went back to being more clear because he was injured.
Maybe it wasn't. You know, I think I'm making that up. Because didn't he relieve Levi in the bowl game?
He did, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, it's hard to tell looking back at it when he was he injured or was he just not playing? Because, I mean, there's obviously gaps. There's almost a month gap from September to October.
He's the guy that
2 week gap.
Yeah. He's the guy that you would think if you're trying to craft the argument for, oh, this is like the optimal outcome for receiver performance. Like, it's probably him starting 12 games, but
you think so?
Yeah, I feel like he's the best raw passer, the best passer in the room. But I don't know. It wouldn't be that surprising if he default, like if he does redshirt this year or just gets beat out by guys with more experience. Like, there's four guys in that room. But where I'm going with this is, there, it feels like there's lots of outcomes that just could be really annoying from a receiver production perspective. Obviously, we love the history associated with that offensive system, but is this quarterback room as it's being assembled and been assembled, is this really optimal in terms of what we would like to see if we're drafting Jalen Royals and the pump and dump guy and anyone else, right? Probably not.
Well, to be fair, three quarterbacks threw the football for Utah State last year, and he averaged 21 fantasy points a game. So, yeah. I mean, we've technically already seen it happen.
Yeah.
And I think, actually, this is going to sound wild. I would probably rank it Legat, Barnes, Hillstead. Like, I think we saw enough out of Barnes to think that, okay, like, if he is the quarterback, probably not the end of the world, you know?
Yeah.
Hillstead, to me, if you looked at his games where he had some better games, you know, he didn't actually just crush it with Royals. It was a little bit more Vaughn or just super spread out. I think he's fine regardless of quarterback, just because we've already seen it. Yeah, you know, the guy that would have worried us is the guy that's at South Hill. I think all quarterbacks would be fine in the system except for one, which is that guy that's at South Alabama.
Well, that guy's not an FBS quarterback.
But yet your boy, who is it, Jeff Kefi or however you pronounce his name, thought that he was in the lead for quarterback over Geo.
Who thought that?
The Texas State guy wrote that article and was like,
oh, Kef?
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's the culture of working at whatever that site is, Pro Football Network or whatever. You just make shit up that's wrong and then blast it out. So
people talk about it because it's wrong.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's their engagement strategy. I do love Kef, but I don't know.
That was a questionable call.
Yeah.
All right, different topic here. We're switching to running backs. Is there a chance that Ollie Gordon's got the most likelihood of being a bust for first rounder? Do you trust Gundy enough to think he's just, there's no world where Gordon busts?
Yeah. So was the question that he has the least likelihood to bust?
The question is that he, or maybe the hot take would be he's the most likely of first rounders to be a bust. How about
who
that?
Are the first rounders that, so we're just talking about,
I mean, your typical, right? I would say your typical first round, you know, GT, Gordon, Taylor, Hampton, Giddens, and like Maffa or Harvey at this point.
I wouldn't agree with it. I think so. I think it is a hot take. I expect Genty to miss games just because it seems like it's him and his MO. So I'm trying to get myself some Dubar where I can at current, especially at current prices. Ollie, I don't know what they're going to do this year in terms of like how much they're going to feed him and stuff. You think that they're going to give him a ton of carries? Like you can craft arguments around concern for him. Just like go back and if you want, just like search for articles surrounding, like there's all these quotes leading up to last year and across Ollie's freshman year about how it's basically just Gundy trying to use the media as a mechanism for motivating Ollie Gordon to like, dude, just get in shape, like hit the weight room a little, like stop being so plump, etc. So obviously like it worked really well, like far beyond like any possible expectation. But like if that's in your background, right, in terms of like kind of what it takes, like I don't know, maybe he regresses just from the perspective of like how is he going to take to that success. And like maybe there's concerns there that we don't necessarily have for other players.
Wasn't that kind of like a thing early last year? Was like Gundy came out and just like shit on Ollie's like work ethic?
Not just last year, freshman year too. Like it was.
It seems possible.
In the 50 team last year, like so, I do like a ton of Oklahoma State research every single year. And try and like talk to different people that cover the team, because when they hit at running back and receiver and quarterback, it's bigger hits than most other schools. So like I listen to podcasts and like talk to people and stuff, and like all through camp, the inclination seemed to be like the guy who is going to get the first carry this year is who is it? Not Collins, the guy who transferred out. Nixon, yeah. It was like Nixon looks like he's going to be the first running back out. Obviously, it's anyone's game after that. I was like, oh, all right, in 50 team. Like, let me just grab Nixon. Is like, okay, maybe he runs with the job. Obviously, that worked out really well. But I mean, Ollie's got an awesome offensive line coming back. It seems like, and you would think they're not going to ease up off the gas in terms of the workload that they're getting him. He's got, I guess, different ways he can bust, but like, let me put it this way: like, when in the threshold of the draft where Ollie goes, picks 1, 2, maybe 3 or whatever, I'll pull the trigger on him. But like, the whatever the threshold is for RJ Harvey, Omari and Hampton, I'm never taking those guys. I'm taking other people instead.
Where is the earliest you would take RJ Harvey?
I don't know. Maybe like the third round. Like I'll just always find myself taking other guys, whether it's Hobert. Dude, the guy I really want, it's just impossible to get him. Now he goes earlier every single draft, is Jaden Ott. It sucks that I'm like, just the way that draft order worked out. Like I had visions of getting him in like the end of the second round, early third round. And he was always going like a couple of picks before I could. In these first couple drafts, now he's going like early second. I feel like he'll end up going first round. Like I would rather have him over Harvey and Hampton. Did you see who hit? I forget what his role is on the team, but it might be like running backs coach or like. But who they brought on staff at Cal this year?
No.
They brought on that dude. He kind of sucks, but Sterling Gilbert. Do you remember him?
I do not remember Sterling Gilbert.
Really? He's part of, like, he is very much, I kind of bucket him in some ways similarly to Jake Spavital in a bad way, in the sense that, like, it's like, all right, dude, like, you had, like, you rode some other people's coattails and kind of used the success of other people to hitch your way into a bunch of other jobs. You keep messing up and you keep getting other jobs type deal. Like he hitched himself to Babers, who hitched himself to Sean Lewis from a play calling perspective. But Sterling Gilbert, when he was in OC, and like he's not gonna be OC at Cal, but still I'm kind of hopeful that like there's some sort of impact there. Like he's the guy who he gave Devontae Foreman 50 carries against Kansas. and he's like notorious for just doing fullback dives just based on how many men are in the box, or not fullback dives, halfback dives. Based if it's a light box, it's a halfback dive.
So it's funny you say that time. Because I Wikipedia him, and no joke, under University of South Florida, it says his overall offensive style received criticism as he was over reliant on halfback dive plays and did not attempt to open up the field. So, this guy's been all over the place. I mean, he has not been at he's literally been at like 10 schools in the last 12 years.
Yeah, it's wild. But everybody's got their kind of different flavor. I think once you get past Genty and Ollie, Ott's pretty high up there for me. Like the dude is awesome watching him play, like so explosive, does in the run game, pass game. And like if I can just look for anything that maybe heightens him a little bit from a last year to this year perspective, maybe it's this loser going on staff and the offense moving toward just a little more Jaden Ott-centric offense.
Well, Jaden Ott missed some time, and he's like consistently missing time year over year, right? Well, I guess it felt like he always was out the second half. Like he didn't finish the game against Auburn, right? And then there was another game where he didn't finish. I think like USC, when the USC game, didn't he get hurt and not finish that game where he was incredible?
Maybe. The problem with Pac-12 after dark, right?
Nobody gets the Pac-12 network, so you can never really tell how it all came to be.
Yeah, exactly.
Who is the – well, I want to say one – have you seen Ollie Gordon's end-of-season schedule?
Yeah, it's incredible, right? The Oklahoma State schedule is like a dream for the playoffs.
It's Texas Tech and Colorado. Just incredible. I mean, that's almost as good as you can get for a Power Four.
Right.
So if it, okay, so I agree. You know, I just figured we could talk Ollie Gordon. We hadn't talked about Ollie Gordon in a while. And I know you love Gundy and all that. So I was trying to see how you would put together an argument where there's no way he's in bust. Who is the bust then in the first round? If you had to just pick one of the 12 that was just picked in the first round of the Champ Series draft we just started today, who is the one?
Hampton.
You think so? Not. I leaned, as much as I like Taj Brooks, to me, I think it might be Taj.
Oh, is he first round still?
He kind of snuck in on this one. So I guess if we...
He's too easy. That's a free square. He's a free square. He doesn't count.
Okay, so Hampton is the guy. Why do you think it's Hampton?
I think the offense has strong crater potential. Like, I don't believe in Max Johnson. I don't think that... I don't have faith in the... offensive, like whatever the system is there. Like they have one of those chip guys, one of the
zillion. So you don't believe in Chip Lindsey?
Yeah, yeah. I don't believe in him. I think that Drake May was like the tide that raised all the boats or whatever there. And they're like, that offense is going to really just be down across the board this year.
All right. So the next topic for me, which we kind of already touched on a little bit, but I think we could dig deeper into it, is I don't think it's smart to take a quarterback in the first two rounds. I don't think there's one quarterback, even including Salter and Byron Brown, that is worth overall taking in the first or second round. How crazy am I?
So I'm a big proponent of the strategy of like working backwards when you're figuring out what you want to do with your draft. So start at the end. And if you feel good about your end game picks, it's harder with like 30 rounds, right? End game is like, it's pretty far down there. But working backwards and allow that to kind of inform my strategy in the earlier rounds, unless I just want to like do something for funsies or whatever. I generally agree with you, especially like with how some of our initial drafts have played out. I have felt fine in terms of the quarterback rooms that I've amassed when I haven't gotten Brown or Salter early on. And I don't know, at the end of the drafts where I did draft, I guess it's draft, when I did take Salter out, reflected back on it. I was like, quarterback room that much better as a result of burning a first round pick on a quarterback? Probably not. So I don't really disagree with you, especially if I can snag McLeod in the third. Like that's so, like that is, I think, preferable. You know how I feel about Salter, so it's annoying for me to have to try and push that affection to the side. But yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, for me, you brought up working backwards. This is kind of how I've been drafting. Is I've always tried to get at least one, probably two running backs in the first two picks because I like the receiver options that are so late. So I feel like if I take two receivers at the top,
then why'd you take Hobert then? Why didn't you just?
I just think he's incredibly safe, and I wanted to get one receiver in. Plus, you know, I felt like 2-1 was probably a little early for Ott, maybe a little early for Mafa. I'm sorry, for some of these guys that, the other running backs. I just figured, hey, let me lock in a receiver that I think is about as sure in stone as it get, and I can wait. I'll probably go 2 or 3 running backs in a row now, though, that I got the one receiver.
Fair.
But, yeah, I just think that ultimately – you gain some ground with like a Brown or Salter and even obviously Gabriel. I just don't know if it's enough over some of these other options that you're sacrificing. So that's why I kind of think first round, there's no way I'm going quarterback. Second round, I mean, Gabriel's still on the board and ours at 205. So that kind of shows you.
That pucks the trend a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't think I've seen him get outside the first round this year. Here's one that's a little bit off the board completely. Cam Coleman, the freshman Auburn receiver, is more valuable or more worth a pick in best ball or redraft than Jeremiah Smith.
It's a good one. As you, when you started that, I was like, I hope you take it in this direction. I don't agree though, because you have to rely on Peyton Thorne as a passer. So I would lean Smith.
What's the world? What, tell me the world of how Jeremiah Smith becomes valuable in redraft. You know, how does he get there?
Yeah, it's tough, right? I had marked down to like consider taking Smith in this draft that we're doing right now, but it's probably more. It probably doesn't play out as fun as I wanted to, given I would have to use like a pretty decent pick on him. The way he gets there, like how many points a game do you think Ohio State scores? 40 to 50 a game?
Probably on the, what, like 40?
Yeah, he's on the field as a top three receiver. Like, we don't know how the offense is going to look. Like, I think that we're largely thinking it will be mostly Chip Kelly driven, but I guess the world for Smith is it's the offense is has some Ryan Day flavor to it as well. They're passing a little more than we expect. He's on the field all the time as a top three receiver. Carnell Tate doesn't really, he's better than Carnell Tate, excuse me. Ibuka is still kind of whatever. A bunch of things probably need to happen.
Yeah, I mean, do you remember what like Ibuka and Fleming produced last year?
They weren't good.
They were not good.
Yeah,
and you wonder how much of that was McCord and how much of that is offensive style. And I don't know. To me, ultimately, it doesn't seem like he's creeping up because of Josh.
Right, right.
So where are you thinking you would take him then? You were saying you were considering
Jeremiah. Yeah, I was. It was going to be high, or I think 14th.
That's pretty steep.
I know. Now I'm second guessing it.
For 40 catches and 500 yards. If you think about it, that's a good.
No, I think if things broke right, he could be like 45, 850.
So you think he could go almost 20 yards a catch as a true freshman with Will Howard or Devin Brown throwing him the football?
or Sane or Aaron Nolan. Yeah, or if we can find another year for Gebbia. It sucks we didn't get to see Gebbia on the field in the bowl game. Like, it wouldn't have been any worse than that trash that they threw out there.
Okay. I'll stop berating you about Jeremiah Smith. I thought it was interesting. Cam Coleman, you know, apparently looked really good in that spring game. And Nate had made a comment of like, well, somehow Cam Coleman made Peyton Thorne look good. So I don't know. Cam Coleman was, I mean, obviously Jeremiah Smith was like the head and shoulders number one receiver, right? Yeah. But like Coleman was pretty close behind. It wasn't, I mean, he was like a, wasn't he like a top?
Yes, yeah, you're right. You're making a good argument. Maybe especially factoring in, like Coleman's free right now, right?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen him get picked. So
should I take him in round two?
I think so.
Fucking Greg just took Ashlock. So now I don't know what I'm going to do in this draft.
You should go Dylan Gabriel.
Yeah, right. Just be even more hypocritical than usual.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm looking up the receiver rankings. I guess, why is this not loading? Coleman was third. So, I mean, he was up there for sure. Ahead of Ryan Williams, ahead of Justin Williams. I'm sorry, that's a linebacker, but also ahead of him. I don't know. The concern with Coleman would be that, like, Auburn really truly is, like, a one – at best, one receiver. Like, there's a world where the receiver one isn't even all that good. And then the concern would be that – what's his name? From Georgia State comes in, and then all of a sudden it's like, all right, he's losing some of those targets that we need to go to Coleman from him. So – I think that's interesting. I think his average draft position is just going way too high. It's just getting way too high at this point. And you were busy taking Damian Martinez in the second round. What do you think of the Oregon State offense? I don't think we've talked about that offense. It's like a shell of what it was last year. New coaching staff, except I guess what they promoted the defensive coordinator to be the head coach.
Yeah, I haven't looked into it nearly enough. My idea with Damien though is just now he gets to go nuts on a Mountain West schedule, basically. Yeah, it's just praying he doesn't transfer out. You would think that he probably would have already done it, but he's a kid, right? He can change his mind. So
he had like a weird week or two, right, where he wasn't he leaving, and then he was coming, and then he was arrested, and then he was
cop to Dewey,
playing the bowl game, and he wasn't playing the bowl game. I just, for me, with Damian Martinez, I've kind of cooled on him a little bit. Is that offense could be really bad, couldn't it? Like, you're obviously, the nice thing is that what you said, the schedule, but it feels like there's a world where that offense is just awful.
They have Felix's boy, the Giovanni McCoy.
Awesome name. It is a little concerning. Is it not though?
Yes. Yeah. It is.
Relying on the Idaho quarterback from 2023.
Counter argument though is you would think, how many touchdowns did he go for last year? Like, it wasn't that many, right? It felt like he was getting
this weird split thing with him,
right? You would think that like his touchdown volume could improve too, since they're not doing the Jonathan Smith thing. Fucking Mike just took a plug.
I was waiting to see if you would see that.
I'm quitting Champion Series since all my good ideas are getting stolen. You would think that with Jonathan Smith gone, less linebackers running in for touchdowns, and less quarterback sneaks, and less fullback dives and stuff, and more Damian Martinez give the ball to our best player in the red zone could play out.
I was thinking about Michigan State and how like Jonathan Smith's there, and how you want the people keep saying you want the RB1 with Jonathan Smith. And, yeah. Like, there are some really interesting names that have been successful with him, right? Like Jamar Jefferson and BJ Baylor mm-hmm. were brought up on one of the Campus yep. Game podcasts. And I was like, wow, that's completely right. But I distinctly remember the last 2 years, Damian Martinez being jerked around and getting touchdowns stolen from him. So all that to say, are we overhyping Nathan Carter with like a 10, 11, 12th round ADP? Like that, I started drafting him, and I am severely cooling on that because of just this back of the head concern that, you know, it's possible that they kind of go Jalen Berger and Carter enough to annoy you.
Yeah. The thesis with the Jonathan Smith running back, I think, is more floor related, which is valuable in a space with so much variance, right? College fantasy football, generally speaking, so much variance, so much unknown. Being able to assign a floor to a position on a team in general is like, that is very much something that's in demand and something that's coveted, especially when you're drafting in early April. So I get it to that degree, but I had considered Carter a couple of times, and I feel like he keeps going a little before I'm ready to take him. I think like round 12 is fine. Single digits, I give more pause to though, especially since you would think that things are not necessarily set in stone from an RB pecking order perspective. But like Carter has to be the favorite, right?
I would imagine he's the favorite. There is a concern for me with the schedule. Have you seen, I think they play like Michigan, Ohio State, Iowa, all in a row, and I don't know if that team is good enough to. I don't think the volume is going to be high enough, at least for Carter to survive that stretch.
It's definitely a concern. I don't think you can take him too high, just because there's like it's probably not going to be incredible year one at Michigan State type deal. So like early to mid teens, we can have a conversation, but single digit rounds, it's probably not happening for me.
Okay. My final planned topic, USC receivers, I guess to start, I mean, Miller Moss, how many yards does Miller Moss throw for, you think?
When are they bringing it? When is Lincoln Riley going to sneak in the grass, go and snipe a different quarterback?
Well, the reason why, okay, you're probably not wrong, but we would say the floor for the passing attack for USC is with Miller Moss.
Yeah.
The floor. So if we were to project, hey, this is how much he's going to throw for, that's the minimum that we can expect from the receivers, right? So what do you think that floor is?
We're assuming 12 games, presumably.
Sure.
Floor, I mean, 275 a game has to be, like, I don't have any stats in front of me, but, like, has Riley ever averaged less than 275 passing yards a game?
I can't imagine.
Right.
It feels like to me Miller Moss's floor is, like, 3,200 yards, which is probably like 275, and like 25 to 30 touchdowns. And the reason why that's important is because none of these receivers, except maybe Zachariah Branch, is being drafted consistently high. Like, so Branch is like a single digit guy, but you know, I looked at some of the drafts I've been in, like Deuce Robinson's not being picked in every draft. Jacoby Lane's not being picked in every draft. If you wanted to get weird, like, some of these guys are available everywhere. So
Mekhi Lemon.
Is Kyren Ware Hudson still there? He is, right? Like, so is this a dart we should be throwing at the end of drafts? Just whatever guy is available and just try to spread it out?
The idea of Deuce is so cool. I really wish he had that tight end tag associated with him, but it feels like that's probably never coming back. I don't know anything about their depth chart, how it projects to be in terms of, like, okay, who's backing up who's likely to be a starter. Do they do hockey lines? I can't remember. They do, right?
They just do a lot of it in general. At least last year, it felt like the year before that they didn't, but last year they were always rotating guys.
Yeah.
I think the presumption is that Deuce and Jacoby are outside in Zachariah's slot, right? I mean, Deuce is 6'6", Jacoby is 6'4". Like, it's not really possible for those two to play slot.
Yeah. Dude, how do you feel about, so with Deuce and with my boy Nick Harbor, they both do like the multi-sport thing, and it feels like they're doing like nothing from a spring perspective. You played D1 ball. I played D1 tennis for almost the full semester, so I count in this as well, I suppose. But do you think it's like, how are they going to actually get better from one year to the next if they're not doing anything for their sport?
I don't think they're hindering their future, like NFL, because NFL right. will just always go off of like athleticism and then some production. But I think from like a college production standpoint, it certainly has to be hampering, right? Like, how do they learn the playbook? Like, how do they get chemistry with the quarterback? Things that don't matter in the long run for them, but like for getting on the field and producing for us, I think it certainly has an impact.
Yeah. I want to draft Deuce, but wide receiver only. And it feels like there's a lot of ways that he fails. I haven't pulled the trigger. I don't know anything really about Lane and.
Well, Lane had that sweet game against Louisville.
And Lemon was good too, right?
And Deuce had one catch, one touchdown. Lane had three catches, two touchdowns. And Lemon had two catches, 75 yards.
When does Branch go in drafts?
Branch is like, I think he's between 7th and 10th rounds, 6th and 10th round, something like that.
It's pretty early.
Branch is untouchable to me.
Yeah.
He's kind of like Mario Williams was for me last year. Like, it's just like, this is...
It can, you could, we could easily regret it.
What, it's Branch?
Like, yeah, just passing on Branch. Like, he feels very boomer bust.
Yeah, the concern, or I would say the comment there would be, USC hasn't had like a superstar receiver one, or Lincoln hasn't, I guess, since like the Oklahoma days. Yeah. And, you know, like the CeeDee Lamb, Hollywood Brown years, there's been a bunch of years where the receiver one is not a fifth round pick. So this is like what I said last year, which was like, whatever one is available as late as possible is the one I'll just take.
Right.
Like, I throw darts at the most random of guys anyways. Like, if I'm going to throw a dart at, like, Pat Bryant or Xavier Townsend, you know, Daquan Felton, like, why wouldn't I just, what's the harm in this draft, my dart being Jacoby Lane?
Yeah, it's fair.
Do you have a favorite late round receiver that you like to target?
Oh, good question.
That you'll no longer be able to target because you're going to
see draft DT Sheffield pretty much every draft. I feel like that could make me look very stupid. I should be drafting Nick Nash later because no one else wants him when in the area I've been drafting him. But so we can lump him in there, and hopefully I'm planning on moving on, starting to take him a little later than I have been. I really want to be drafting Kai Thomas and Christian McCoy, but I have reason for pause on both of them. Christian McCoy, he was out for the year last year. I think he's not still healthy. He's not healthy yet. We don't know what the heck is going on with the quarterback room there. Mike put out a graphic that basically said, hey, this OC gets the ball to his WR1 a lot, so that's awesome. But I don't know. I think I will probably start trying to take him more. And then Kai Thomas, when I was doing like RB depth chart stuff a little while ago, I was like, this is like, he's still there. No one knows he's there. I'm going to start drafting him in every draft. And then I realized Matt Johnson is no longer the OC. He followed Sean Lewis to San Diego State, and they brought him this nerd from that was like the OC at Charlotte as his most relevant experience. And like their top running back, it was like 400 yards a year. I was like, this sucks. But I don't know if like, just because like him having to sit out last year because of some bullshit double transfer stuff, being probably really talented. Like, he's that classic like Penny Boone, let's go P5 to Mac and smash a la Rashad Amos as well. Like, that, the idea is copy and paste that now for Kai Thomas. But also we're talking about a team that might struggle for two wins in an offensive system that doesn't seem like it, that it really looks to create a volume pick, if you will, at running back. But just like the being the what seems like the only person who even knows that Kai Thomas is actually there, is like, it makes me want to just take him. But I haven't pulled the trigger yet.
I think you could get away with taking him pretty late. Has he been going in all these drafts?
No, he hasn't been drafted anywhere yet. Dude, like, I've heard him referred to as like not being there, but you go to Kent State 2024 roster, he's there. But that didn't at all answer your question. I guess Sheffield.
Yeah, he's like, a running back, so yeah.
Yeah, I just want to talk about what I want to talk about. But I guess Sheffield is my answer. I think I've drafted him in every draft so far, just hoping that, like, Eric Morris recruited him to Washington State for a reason. Now he recruited him to North Texas for that same reason. Let's get Chandler Morris to DC Sheffield as a connection and make it happen.
Or you're just a glutton for punishment.
Or I'm just a glutton for punishment.
Just running it back 2 years in a row. Why not, right?
Right.
Wow. All right. Well, I kind of took over all the topics today, obviously. Anything you wanted to bring up besides Kai Thomas before we wrap up?
Let's see. Let's see if I can, if there's anything else worth talking about. Oh, let's go a little more about the late round wide receivers. Are you drafting that Tulsa receiver at all?
Benjamin?
Yeah.
I did. I did once in the recent draft. I wonder what's going to happen at quarterback. That freshman, Kirk Francis or whatever, it seemed like the games correlated to his games, right?
Right.
Where he played.
Yeah.
And I'm curious how much Cardale Williams is healthy / is good and what kind of impact. I think he's worth, like, obviously a late pick, but I don't know if I'll do it all the time.
That offense feels like it could be geared at taking it. Like, there could be a big step forward coming this year because the idea is that they have a system that should be very fantasy friendly. It was arguably like just a disaster, largely predicated on inability to find a quarterback that could throw a forward pass in year one. Solve that, mesh that with like offensive play calling that should be very friendly from a passing perspective. And like this could be interesting. So I'm intrigued, and like Benjamin is someone I'm considering targeting. So I stumbled on this in happenstance when I was just looking to make a trade in Nate's Dynasty League. And so I traded Shadur Sanders, who I was desperate to get rid of. Because I think we've seen the ceiling, and I wanted to get out. I ended up getting back Jonte Cook and one other player. And the other player, initially I was like, all I wanted to get was just like another starting quarterback back. And then like that, I would feel good about the trade if I can get Jonte Cook and another starting quarterback. And then I was thinking about the other starting quarterback I got back. And I was like, is there potential for like a year two jump for this guy in the system that he's in, previously a very or pretty highly thought of recruit that kind of showed out at his previous school a little bit, came in to his new school into what is largely considered pretty pass heavy scheme that does some things from a fantasy perspective, some up and down games year one, but I don't even know if like theory is maybe a little too strong. I think that there's some practicality associated with the idea that like QB transfers in first year, it's kind of getting your feet wet. Second year, we see a jump. Like, do you think we could see that with Hudson Card?
I mean, I could see him perform better in an elite like Nate's league. Like, I think there's value in Nate, right? Like, in Hudson Card, like, I have Graham Mertz, and he will probably be a decent third quarterback for me. Considering my roster, probably a decent first quarterback for me. So maybe in that vein, but like in terms of like best ball or redraft, I'm not sure how much he can provide more than like an Alan Bowman. You know, like he's gonna play. I don't know if he has the legs to really make it like that interesting of a pick. Or is he going to get that much of a volume passing? Do you think the volume is there passing?
So he ran for 200 yards and 5 scores last year. Not awful.
I've seen worse. I mean, that's honestly not that bad. That's honestly not that bad. You're right.
Yeah, the schedule.
But
the schedule,
you still need some volume, though. You know, that's not enough to make up for the volume.
Right.
But so, I don't know.
The schedule is not amazing, as you would imagine, playing the Big Ten as well. Like, there's a stretch. I think the playoff schedule, it's like, fuck, I can't start this guy in full championship week. But, yeah, maybe as QB 8.
End of the board. I mean, what's going to be really interesting, and maybe this is how he gets some sort of value, is like, we, you know, my favorite day of the year when Fantrax loads up all the bye weeks into the system. And then I just go through all of my teams to see what positions I'm fucked at in each, draft. Maybe that's a world where he gets a little bit more value, where he has like interesting bye weeks or something, right? Because there are, you know, you get to the point where it's like, this year's gonna be weird with multiple bye weeks and there's multiple teams that are decent. or good that have a bye week in like the playoffs, which is a little bit atypical. So yeah, that'll cause issues. And maybe that's where he gets a little bit of value.
Should we end on the Hudson Card note?
I think we end on the Hudson Card note. I think we make people wait all the way 60 minutes or so for Hudson Card, and then we shut it down.
Great.
Awesome. Well, hope everybody bared with my volume and my my connection. Hopefully it was good enough. Enjoyed the hot take roulette, maybe. And we'll catch you guys hopefully next week. Thank you.